Communication is huge, not just in the fire service, but all over the world. Almost everything we do is to improve our ability to communicate with others through language or technology. Even as I sit here and record this podcast from a small town in Arizona, I'm reaching people all over the world, and I make an active and conscientious effort to be clear in what I'm saying. Understanding whether someone is of high context culture or low context culture can really help in bridging the gap of what it is you're trying to communicate and what's actually being received. In today's episode, I'll talk about the spectrum of high context and low context. I'll give you some tools on how to recognize it in the real world, and I'll let you know how you can make sure that you're focused in on this so that you can understand where other people are coming from.
We feel like it's up to us to hold the line. As we light the spark within ourselves, it comes from way deep down inside. We're so sick of the status quo. We are here to let you know. Unaddressed problems are a liability. Core values, the brotherhood you need. Accountability. Ignited we stand. Ignited we fall. Remember, if you see a need, own it and take action. Ignited we stand. Ignited we fall. Be the ideal firefighter you'd want on your crew. Be ignited.
Right now, my wife's reading a book called The Culture Map by Aaron Meyer. And as she's read it, we've had some pretty good conversations about culture and how different cultures communicate. There was a particular part in the book that showcased the difference between high context communication and low context communication. And I'd really like to read it out loud to you right now. So it's between two people, Mr. Diaz and Mr. Chen, and they're purposefully named those things due to show you the differences in their culture. So let's see if you can kind of pick up on what's going on here. So Mr. Diaz says, "It looks like some of us are going to have to be here on Sunday to host the client visit." And Mr. Chen responds with, "I see." Mr. Diaz, "Can you join us on Sunday?" Mr. Chen, "Yes, I think so." Mr. Diaz, "That would be a great help." Mr. Chen, "Yes, Sunday is an important day." Mr. Diaz, "In what way?" Mr. Chen, "It's my daughter's birthday." Mr. Diaz, "Oh, how nice. I hope you all enjoy it." Mr. Chen, "Thank you. I appreciate your understanding." So there's a lot of subtext there and a lot of reading between the lines that is being assumed and expected. Mr. Diaz is the low context communicator in this scenario, in that he relies on direct and explicit communication, whereas Mr. Chen is more contextual, relying on subtle hints to convey understanding. It's very implicit. Is either Mr. Chen or Mr. Diaz wrong, per se? No, but they each are very different in their cultural approach, which could lead to a miscommunication, as it seemed to have done here. Right? Because Mr. Diaz made it clear, like, "We're going to have to be here on Sunday. Can I count on you to be here on Sunday?" And Mr. Chen's like, "Yeah, yep, I think so." And Mr. Diaz is like, "Okay, great. That'll be great." And Mr. Chen is then like, "Oh, my daughter's birthday is on Sunday." And it's assumed that that Mr. Diaz understands this, and that he not only understands that it's her birthday, but that Mr. Chen won't be coming in on Sunday because of this. So what ultimately winds up happening? Well, if this were to play out, Mr. Chen would not show up to work on Sunday, even when he told Mr. Diaz, "Yeah, I think I can be there." And Mr. Diaz confirms that would be a great help. So it's interesting to see how these communication failures and assumptions make for poor results, right? This miscommunication results in someone looking bad because they're not coming into work, even though their boss implicitly or explicitly told them that he needs him there and asked him to be there, right? So it's interesting to observe things like this as we go throughout our day, as we go throughout working on our fire crews or even in our offices or wherever we work. We can observe the different high context and low context people and how they communicate on a daily basis. And that's my goal with this episode, is to help you understand the culture of communication. This was just a small peek into this big giant world. But this book, The Culture Map by Aaron Meyer, is really amazing. And I'm excited to read it. It dives a lot deeper into like the research, the studies, where these different cultures all over the world fall on the map when it comes to high context, low context, and also like level of directness and level of assumptions, or indirectness, or avoiding conflict, if you will. One of the things that I kind of did a search on the internet about high context and low context cultures, and Masterclass came up with a great article. And in it, it's written about, it asks the question, you know, what is a high context culture? And in this article, it says that a high context culture are cultures in which subtlety and collective understanding rule the day. So this involves many Asian and Arabic countries like China, Korea, Saudi Arabia. So for example, in a high context culture, you might say more through how you make eye contact or how you don't make eye contact than you would through verbally expressing your innermost thoughts and feelings. And this style of communication, according to this article, requires a great deal of commonality between participants to be understood, right? That understanding helps bridge the gap, and then that communication is solidified. But in a low context culture, directness and individual expression make the most sense. So if you're not openly clear and you leave room for assumption, that's not a good thing. We're not relying on our cultural understanding of each other. We want to be very clear, very explicit, and direct in our communication. So countries like the United States, Germany operate off of like a lower level of cultural context. And so we're very direct. And this is why, as a result, our populations become more diverse demographically. The article on masterclass.com says that lower context cultures can enable a greater degree of cross-cultural communication in certain scenarios, given their emphasis on conveying information more explicitly, being more clear, more direct. So some of the characteristics that this article showcases in regards to high context cultures are that of a collectivistic nature. And that means like high context cultures, they're generally collectivist in that they place higher value on the good of an entire group of people than on any one individual. So this reemphasizes this collective understanding, just things that people just naturally understand by being in that area and operating in that area. So it reduces people's need to spell things out. So on the flip side of that, when someone who's low context, who wants clarity, wants to express that clarity and understanding and information, which is what, you know, the United States is all about, some people could see that as condescending. Some people could see that as rude. Now, personally, I don't see it as rude. I see information and clear explanation of that information as gracious, to be honest with you. I see that as a gift, personally, and I take it as a gift. But another characteristic of high context cultures that this article mentions is that it's homogeneous. So for a culture to be high context, it's helpful for there to be a great deal of like a community understanding among its population. So like in Japan, more than 98% of the population is Japanese. That's a big number. And so that leads to shared language, shared culture, shared upbringing, significant commonalities and like what kind of music people like, all things like that. It's all very homogenous, right? So these things that are implied within the culture aren't dismissed. They're actually inserted into communication. And so there is no need to be ultimately explicit and clear and factually informative. One of the other characteristics that this article talks about is that they're implicit, right? A lot of things are implied because, like I had mentioned, these people are all growing up in the same area, learning the same culture. And so in an area where it's like 98% that culture and that demographic, a lot can be implied without having to be explicit, right? So that makes sense in regards to not being directly like confrontational and informative. And I don't necessarily want to use the term confrontational because I feel like it's got a negative connotation, even though I personally do not see confrontation as a negative thing. We confront things all the time in the fire service, and that's just kind of our nature of the job. But it's interesting because we have this dichotomy in the fire service of how we want to be direct and explicit when it comes to tackling these life-threatening scenarios. But when it comes to problems inherent within our organizations, we don't really want to pay attention to it. And being direct and explicit in what these problems are, a lot of people take as insult. And then a lot of people take as like, well, you think you're better than us, or you think you know more than us, or all of this stuff. It becomes a very personal thing, which is so odd to me. Like I said, the dichotomy of how people can operate in such life or death situations and be explicit and direct and confrontational, like we will put the fire out, or we will do compressions on you. You do need this. Like, you know, we're not asking the question. We take action in that thing, explicit action. It's not implied. It's not, we don't get on scene and are just kind of like shooting the breeze and, what should we do here? And we're like, well, we should probably put that fire out, or, you know what I mean? We don't waste time on that. We take direct, explicit action, based on the information that we're seeing. And, we don't really take into account, implied understanding. Unless you want to consider implied consent, right? So if someone is needing medical attention, but they're unconscious, it's implied that that person would want you to help them. And that's a little bit different. But anyway, this article also says that high context cultures, high context communicators are reliant on nonverbal cues. So like body language, you know, your eye movements, your facial expressions, all of those things carry more weight than the words you speak. So it's like, it's not necessarily what you say, but how you say it type of thing. When it comes to characteristics of low context cultures, it talks about how low context cultures are much more diverse, much more explicit, much more individualistic, and much more reliant on verbal cues over physical cues and nonverbal cues. So diverse in that we have a bunch of people coming from all over, right? Demographically. And we like the US is a melting pot, right? And as a result, our intercultural communication relies less on subtlety. We have to be much more explicit, much more direct to bridge cultural differences, because clarity in information is what is prioritized here. And it helps us communicate with a much larger, diverse group of people than one specific demographic. This explicit ability to communicate allows us to bridge that gap. We can be directly informative, even though some cultures might see that directness as being rude, but we are very direct and we explain and express what it is we want, what it is we expect, what it is we think, all of this stuff. unfortunately, we have the freedoms to do that. I mean, still, even though people keep trying to deteriorate those, but we still have the freedom to do that thing, which allows us to be much more individualistic when it comes to who we are, who we choose to be, who we interact with, who we align with, all of that stuff. You know, like I'd mentioned, the number of Japanese people in Japan, 98%, that's a huge number. Whereas America is vastly different than that. I don't even know what the percentages would be, because there's just so many different types of people coming here and living here that it would be hard to say, you know, what the majority is of people that the demographic that comes here, which is why American culture is so unique. Because it's like a mishmash of a bunch of different cultures, and we have to be direct and explicit in our communication with people, allowing us to be more individualistic. And like I said, we're reliant much more on those verbal cues rather than the nonverbal cues, like eye movement, shoulder shrugging, body language, all that stuff. So personally, like I mentioned, I don't see confrontation as a bad thing. In fact, I see it as a good thing, because through that, we're going to be able to improve and continually improve those things that need to be improved upon. Like, we need to shore up those things that are hindering us. And then also disagreement. A lot of people see disagreement as a matter of like personal emotion, but I don't. I see disagreement not as a matter of personal emotion, but rather as a valuable exercise from which truth emerges. And that is what Erin Meyer says in The Culture Map. And I agree with her wholeheartedly, 100%. She goes on to say that in the US, people are trained mostly subconsciously to communicate as literally and explicitly as possible. Good communication is all about clarity and explicitness, and accountability for accurate transmission of the message is placed firmly on the communicator. If you don't understand, it's my fault. I mean, that's communication 101. When you guys take communication 101 in college, they tell you if there's a breach in communication or a misunderstanding, it's the communicator's responsibility to provide a clear message, not the receiver's responsibility to assume and understand what it is we're trying to say. It's the responsibility lies on our shoulders as the communicator. But by contrast, in many Asian cultures, like I was talking about Mr. Chen, right, including India, China, Japan, and Indonesia, messages are often conveyed implicitly. There's a lot to be assumed and implied, and it requires the listener to read between the lines. There's a lot left to assumption and bridging that gap, which to me is not a good thing when things are left to assumption. In this instance, good communication is, what does she say? She says, good communication is subtle, layered, and may depend on copious subtext with responsibility for transmission of the message shared between the one sending and the one receiving. And that's what she says in regards to the Asian cultures. Like I said, they require a lot to be assumed. And so in their minds, good communication is very subtle, and it relies on subtext, and it relies on cultural acceptance of certain behaviors, which leaves a lot of room for interpretation, right? And a lot of room for confusion. If you're not clear, things aren't going to go well. If, like one of my mentors, Donald Miller, he says, if you confuse, you lose. And that's it. Like, if people are confused, they're not going to want to be a part of that thing at all. But one of the reasons I don't see conflict or disagreement as a matter of personal emotion, like I don't see that as a personal attack. If someone were to disagree with me, I don't see it as a personal attack on my character. Like, I look at things objectively. I tend to look at things much more objectively than subjectively. But a lot of times people can't separate the idea from the person. So if you're challenging an idea, you're challenging that person. They see anyone who's questioning their thoughts as a direct attack on them, as a person, like a personal attack. Again, this is where four agreements comes in, right? Don't take things personal. But it's a very subjective way of thinking to think that if someone is asking questions or challenging your idea, that they're attacking you. It's a very me against you idealism rather than an us against the problem approach, which is the approach that I prefer to take. You know, people often won't approach confrontation, and they'll continue to ignore problems because their relationships and ability to communicate aren't strong enough to endure working together to mitigate the problem. So they'll sacrifice understanding for the sake of the relationship because their relationship isn't strong enough, and they're not able to effectively mitigate the problem without crossing that line, because they do take it as a me against you methodology rather than an us against the problem. And This is one big reason why the status quo reigns supreme in organizations who actively avoid confrontation. If you're never willing to talk about the problem, how can you possibly expect the problem to go away? Again, think of the urgency of a house fire. Like if we just showed up on a fire and saw that it was burning and then we're just like, well, it'll go out eventually, and we didn't take any action, like we would all be fired. We would all be fired. It would not go well. We have to be an us against the problem mentality. We have to have this idea that it's the problem is the issue, and we have to work together to mitigate it. And one of the things also is that I've noticed with people that I've worked with is that sometimes when you speak with passion, people think you're disagreeing with them. So I want to make it clear, like speaking with passion is not the same thing as disagreement or contention even, right? So let's talk about books and movies or even processes and trainings that we do, right? So if I'm being passionate about that thing, that doesn't mean I disagree with you. So, you know, if you're saying that Avatar is the best movie ever made, and I disagree with you, or I talk to you about, you know, or ask you questions about why that is and this and that, and maybe I explain to you reasons why maybe I don't really think it's the best movie ever made, but you really do. Your passion doesn't mean you're necessarily inherently disagreeing with me. Now we might disagree on that opinion, but just because you're passionate about it does not make it an instance where like you're coming at me as a person. And like if you like a book or a movie and I disagree with you, that doesn't mean I dislike you as a person. You know, the same rule applies. Like it's not me against you, it's us against the topic, or it's us looking at the topic. It's us objectively standing next to each other, looking at this thing, looking at this piece of art, or looking at this process or policy or form of training or whatever it is. It's us standing together, looking at the issue objectively, not subjectively pointing fingers at each other, trying to win an argument as to who's right or who's better. Because that is not going to get anywhere. Like it's not going to get anyone anywhere. It actually is going to just maintain the status quo. Not only is it going to maintain the status quo, but it's going to deteriorate those relationships because people are going to take those things personally, and then they're going to hold a grudge. And then you want to know what people who see confrontation as a negative thing do? They don't confront people. So therein lies the inherent byproduct of not taking accountability, right? So we're just going to sit in not taking accountability and not confronting other people for 20 years. And then, you know, he'll retire or I'll retire or we'll just leave or maybe just never work with each other. Rather than have a confrontation, a healthy confrontation, a healthy conflict, mitigate the issue, come to an understanding and grow from there. It's just crazy to me that how people think that being passionate or being explicit in communication is a bad thing. It just blows my mind. And I actually have an instance where I dealt with this in the field. I like to keep my patients informed. No matter what I'm doing to them, if I'm sticking them with an IV or giving them a drug, I tell them what it is I'm doing and why it is I'm doing it. Because I can't assume these people know what the hell is going on, right? I mean, they obviously don't, which is why they called me in the first place, to show up and help them solve their problem. So if I need to help someone, I'm going to tell them why I'm doing it and why what's happening is happening. And I've learned over the years, over my 17-year career, that keeping people informed, keeping your patients informed specifically, helps them mitigate their fear, helps their fear of the situation go away. Because if they don't know, first of all, they don't know why, you know, the thing is happening. So they call you and they expect you to know what's happening. Why would I hoard that information? Why wouldn't I let them know what's going on? So let me give you an example of how this looked in the field one time. We got called for a guy, he was like in his mid-20s, and it was for a heat emergency. And his girlfriend called because he passed out on the lawn mowing his grass in the summer heat here in Arizona, which takes a lot out of you. So he got pale, he passed out. She kind of dragged him over into the shade on the porch, and he was sitting there when we showed up. And the guy was pale, obvious heat emergency, right? I mean, all the signs and symptoms pointed to that. So what we did was we brought him inside the house, cooled him off a little bit to the point where he was talking normally and able to respond to us. We assessed his vitals, and big surprise, he was dehydrated. His blood pressure was like 70 over 40 or something like that. Did a lot of drinking of alcohol the night before, didn't do a lot of drinking of water that day, went out and spent numerous hours in the hot sun doing yard work. And, you know, I'm not there to judge people. But the girlfriend kept repeating, why is this happening? What's happening? What's happening to him? And so I, as lead medic, I had my guys, you know, get to work on this patient. Well, what we're going to do right now, and I'm explaining this to her and him because he's kind of coming around now. I said, I asked him how he was feeling and this and that, and he was able to kind of communicate minimally. But, she was very scared. Very scared, very upset, did not know what was happening, and kept asking, tell me what's happening, what's going on, what's going on? And so I said, well, all of these things kind of conjoined together to kind of create the perfect storm. The heat really got to him today, so he's a bit dehydrated. What we're going to do is we're going to cool him off a little. We're going to start an IV, and we're going to fill up his tank. We're going to give him fluids, and he's going to feel so much better. But he does need to be transported to an ER. To be monitored and probably get, you know, several more bags of fluid put in him. Okay. Just so that he's safe and that he can recover appropriately. She's like, okay, but why is this happening? And I said, okay, well, like I said, all these things combined, you know, alcohol, a lot of alcohol previous night before, being in the hot sun for a long time today and not drinking a whole lot of water. It all made it so that he wasn't able to stay hydrated. And she's like, but how does that happen? And I said, well, you know, when you're not drinking enough water, you basically don't have enough fuel in the tank, so to speak, to kind of support your daily operations. And the captain on that scene was like, hey, Ryan, that's enough. He got very stern with me and was like, that's enough. And I had another guy named Ryan on my crew, and I was like, I kind of looked at him and he looked at me and he's like, who's the captain talking to, you or me? She's like, should I stop the fluid or is he talking to you in regards to what you're telling this lady? And we just kind of brushed it off. But later on, I was called into the office and was explained to this captain that he felt I was being very condescending to this woman in that I was over explaining the situation to her, or explaining the situation to her at the least. And he was like, he openly told me, like, if you talk to me like that, I'd punch you in the face. And I was like, well, hold on. You know, I could take this personal, right? But I chose not to. And I said, well, wait a minute. The patient, or the RP, the reporting party, the girlfriend, asked me numerous times, what's going on? What's going on? What's happening? Please tell me what's happening. And I was obliging her. I was telling her what's going on. And by the end of the call, she gave me a big hug. And like, as a result, not only that, like, you are a medical professional, I told him. You are a paramedic. You are a medical professional. You know, and you understand through the context clues and the identification of the different vitals that we took and the signs and symptoms that this patient was presenting. Through context, you understood what was happening because you're medically trained. These people were not medically trained. They did not know what happened or what was happening. And they openly asked us to tell them what was happening. So that's what I was doing. I wasn't judging her. I wasn't talking down to her. I wasn't like, boy, you're real dumb for living the way you live, or, you know what I mean? None of that. None of that was happening. But this direct, explicit, low context approach did not sit well with this high context person who leaves a lot of room for assumption rather than being clear. So that was one way that this really stood out to me in the field, and I could actively see this high context and low context cultures or a way of approaching things kind of clash. And I could have taken it personal, but I didn't. I took it as an opportunity to, in fact, be more explicit and clear in my communication. And I did take that opportunity, and I felt like me and that captain came to an understanding. And I think it helped him see me differently, and it definitely helped me see him differently, and understand that, you know, he's going to leave a lot of room for context and assumption on these things. And so I need to make sure that I am communicating in a way that he doesn't feel is offensive. So it's kind of weird, because you kind of got to like walk on eggshells with some people, but I'm sure you all have experienced that from time to time. But one of the ways that I personally make sure or strive to ensure that the mindset of me versus you doesn't win is that I openly state that very thing. I'll take a step to the side, if you will, and proverbially point at the issue and not at the person. It's us against the house that's on fire, not me against you while we let the house burn down. And sometimes, unfortunately, no amount of conveying this can convince those who cling to that desire to take things as a personal attack. Sometimes it's just not going to work. However, if you can build a culture of open communication within your vicinity or your family or on your crew, you'll be amazed at the level of harmony, progress, and growth that comes as a result. And talking about this book, to my wife, really appealed to my flame of intellect and helped me gain a better understanding of cultures, not just within the walls of the firehouse, but all over the world. And I'm very eager to read this book and see what I can glean from it and apply it to my daily life. So many books, so little time, you guys, so many books. I love reading. If you're looking to increase your intellectual understanding of topics like this one that I shared with you today, then you should join The Forge and be a part of a growing number of people who are looking to refine themselves into the versions they want to be. Not the virgins, the versions of themselves that they want to be. And inside The Forge, we work together to make sure we've got strategies in place to close that gap. Click the link in the show notes to fill out a quick questionnaire that will give me a better idea of who you are and the things that you'd like to accomplish. I will then personally reach out to you and share with you how The Forge is structured and what I can do to help get you to where you want to be. The fourth quarter cohort starts on October 1st, and we will be focusing on the teachings of Dr. Levin Lemon and Bill Pentak from their book, The Way of the Shepherd. And in this book, they share 7 secrets to managing productive people. This is a great book for anyone who is currently in a leadership or management role or is looking to become a leader in the future. And honestly, it's a great book for parents. It's amazing to learn some simple principles that can help guide your people to success and a more cohesive team. So with that, I'll say thanks for listening to this episode of the Ignited Firefighter Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and that it's opened up your receptors to seeing and recognizing how context, or lack thereof, and assumptions can destroy the messages we're trying to convey to others. If you enjoyed the show, please do me a favor and give it a quick rating on Apple Podcasts, quick 5-star rating, I would even ask of you. This helps the show grow and allows me to keep providing you with the content like I did today. So thanks again. Until next time, if you see a need, own it and take action. Feed the flames of fitness, intellect, relationships, and energy, and keep your fire burning bright. Refine yourself and become the person you want to be. Be ignited.